We'll begin now, I guess, and the rest of you can just eat. I'm not speaking to the whole group. I'm only speaking to these two rows. Oh, you can't hear it? All right. We're having our Hebrew and Greek feedings. The rest of you can just continue to eat and don't mind us. We'll just do our thing back here. If every once in a while you want to interject, hifil, that's fine. Okay, our text today is Genesis 22. And it's the account of the Akedah, which is the binding of Isaac. The binding of Isaac. And this is really an incredible story. Probably numerous sermons could be developed just from this one pericope. We want to try to understand it within the context of the book of Genesis. And as you recall, in Genesis 12, that means we want to understand it within the storyline. As you recall, in Genesis 12, God called Abraham to leave Ur and come over to Canaan. And God said to Abraham, I will multiply your posterity so that your seed will be like the stars of the heavens. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. I will be your God. I'll bring you into the land of Canaan, which will become your land. So he offers him seed, land, and then in you and in your seed, all the families of the earth will be blessed. So Abraham is the means, and his seed is the means by which God will bless all nations. Right? Now, that promise came in Genesis 12, and then it's repeated at various times. Now, all of a sudden, in Genesis 22, Abraham finally has a son, right? He finally has a son. That was in doubt for the longest time. They were too old to have children. Looked like Ishmael was going to be the heir, and they had a son. Now, this is Abraham's only son. This is the bearer of the promise, you know. This is all of the promise rests with Isaac now. And then the very first thing that God says to Abraham is, go and sacrifice Isaac. Well, you know, you got to be kidding me here. This is the promised seed from whom all the, you know, in and through whose, through whom and his descendants, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. This is the promised line. And this is my only son. And now all of a sudden I have to sacrifice my only son. So it was a test of Abraham that went right to his core. You know, it was a test that really hurt. Not kind of a trivial test. The kind that you might give somebody who doesn't really value that. You say to a person who doesn't really care about money, give me all your money. The person will probably say, fine, you know, it's not going to bother him. But you say to Abraham, sacrifice your only son. wow, it kind of throws into question the whole promise. What about the whole promise? Well, as we're going to see, Abraham, in fact, is willing to sacrifice his son. So we start chapter 22, verse 1. Vayhi achar ha-devarim ha-ela. And it happened after these words, Vaha Elohim. Now God, Nisa, here's the big word. It's a peel of Nasa. It means to test. And God tests people in the Old Testament. He does this a lot. God tests people. Now, human beings are not allowed to test God. That's wrong. That's sin. Thou shalt not test or tempt the Lord thy God. But God tests human beings all the time. He's allowed to do that. Now, the question is, what kind of God is that? Let's do a little theological thinking here. This is a God who tests people. Now, why is God doing that? That's an odd thing. Well, let's read on. God tested Eth Avraham Abraham by Yomer, and he said Elau to him. Avraham, Abraham. And he said, whenever they go, he said, the assumption is always there's a change of speakers. And he said, Abraham said, Hineni, behold, I, right? Here am I. This is how you answer God. Remember, we saw that with Samuel. Here am I. We saw that with Isaiah. Here am I. Send me. So, look, me, just here I am. All right. Vayomer. And he said, again, you got to assume God is the speaker here. God said, kak. That's the imperative of lakak. Take. Na seems to be an intensifying particle. We're not sure exactly what these nas mean. Take eth, direct object marker, bin ka, your son. And notice, it's almost as if God is really, acknowledging how precious this son is to Abraham. So God knows what he's doing here. He's not ignorant. And so he says, take your son, your beloved, Asher, whom Ahavta, you love. So God actually is emphasizing to Abraham, I know this is the son you love. Take your son, your beloved, the one whom you love, Eth Yitzchak, Isaac. Yitzchak, of course, is a verb. It's from the root tzakak. One thing about Hebrew names, they always mean, they're usually little sentences. So it's always fun to just kind of figure out what these names mean. Tzakak means to laugh. So this is a call imperfect. He laughs. So that's the name of the son. He laughs. Who laughs? Abraham laughs. Remember how Sarah laughed? But maybe it's God laughs. God has the last laugh. Anyway, he takes Isaac. That would be a good sermon title for you. God has the last laugh. And Isaac, Velech, and this is an imperative of Halak, and go, and very often the imperative of Halak takes a laka after it, kind of for your advantage or for your sake or carry yourself forward. It's I don't know how to translate that laka. Go, with respect to you, El, to Eretz HaMoriah, to the land of Moriah. Mount Moriah. V'ha'alehu. This is a Hifil imperative of Allah. Allah means to go up. In the Hifil, it means to cause to go up. The who on the end is a pronominal suffix. Him. Cause him to go up. Now, what does that mean? How do you cause somebody to go up? You sacrifice them. You offer them. This is a technical term used in Leviticus for to offer an offering. But what are you doing? You burn it on the altar and the smoke goes up. How do you get a sacrifice up to God? You can't throw it up there. So you burn it and the smoke goes up there. That's a very simple concept here. So it means to offer. Offer up. Offer up Sham there, La Ola, for an Ola. That's one of the technical terms also in Leviticus. It's interesting that here already before Mount Sinai, we have it in Genesis, for a whole burnt offering. This is a whole burnt offering where the whole thing is burned up and offered. Remember how in their sacrificial system, with many of the sacrifices, the priests would be allowed to receive the meat. Or the priest and the worshiper, but here all of the animal goes to God. So offer him, your son, as a whole burnt offering, al, upon, Achad, one, Ha'arim, one of the mountains, Asher, which, Omar, I am saying, this is a call imperfect first person verb of Amar, the O there, which I will say, Eleka, to you. All right. Verse 3, Abraham obeyed. So it says, Vayash came Abraham, and Abraham got up early in the morning, Baboker in the morning, Vayakbos, and he bounded or bridled Kamoro, his donkey, Vayikak, this is from Lakak, and he took Eth Shenei Na'arau, his two lads. Shenei is two, Na'arau, his lads. Those are apparently young boys who were his servants, and he took his two lads, Ito, with him. Va'eth and Yitzchak, Isaac, Beno, his son. Notice how the narrator keeps repeating for us who this Isaac is, so that we really build up the tension here. This is his son, his beloved son. Vaybaka, and he split Atse, the woods, Ola, of the whole burnt offering. He split the woods, the logs, that would be used to light the whole burnt offering. It's kind of a shorthand way of saying that. And he arose and he went to the place which God said to him. All right, verse 4. In the third day, Vayisa Avraham, Abraham lifted up his eyes, and he saw the place from afar. Verse 5. And he said, Abraham said to his lads, to his servant boys, Shavu, that's imperative of Yashav. Dwell, Lakim, for yourselves, or with respect to yourselves, Po, here. So sit here, stay here. Im Hachamor, with the donkey, Va'ani, but I, or while I, Va'hana'ar, and the boy, Na'ar, we will go. This is a cohortative. Emphasizing strong resolution. We intend to go. We intend to go ad ko to thus. Apparently, he's pointing to the mountain, to thus. And we will worship. And notice, this is an important verb. And we will return to you. Notice the we. We, the boy and me, will return to you. Now, within the context of the narrative, how would you take that? You could say Abraham is lying. He doesn't want to let the slave boys know what really is going to happen. What they don't know won't hurt them. You could say that maybe he believes that his son, that it won't really happen, or that his son will be instantly raised from the dead. It's hard to know. It's hard to know how to read his mind. Anyway, verse 6, and Abraham took the woods of the Olah, and he placed them on Isaac, his son. So notice, Isaac carries the sacrificial timber. That's interesting. Kind of reminds you of Jesus carrying the cross. And he took in his hand the fire and the, this apparently is referring to the knife. You would think it would refer to the fuel for the fire. And maybe it is that too, maybe the flint, I don't know. And they went, the two of them, together. And Isaac said to Abraham, his father, notice again they're emphasizing this son-father emphasis. And he said, my father. And he said, here am I. So just as Abraham responded to God, so now Abraham responds to Isaac. My son, here am I, my son. And he said, behold, the fire, the woods, but where is the lamb for the whole burnt offering? Verse 8, and Abraham said, Elohim, God, Yireh, will see, lo, to it. God will see to it, must mean God will provide for it. The lamb for the burnt offering, my son. Now, this is ambiguous. You could take my son as vocative. The God will provide the lamb for the whole burnt offering, comma, O my son. You could take it in apposition. God will provide the lamb for the offering, my son. In other words, my son could be the lamb for the offering. Could be in apposition. So it strikes me as kind of a clever, and I would say deliberate ambiguity. You don't know how to take my son. Is it vocative or is it in apposition? This is verse 8. And they went, the two of them, together. And they came to the place which God had said to him. And he built there, Abraham built there, the altar. And he arranged the wood. And here's that root for Akedah, which is the title of this chapter, the Akedah of Isaac. And he bound, Akkad, and he bound Isaac, his son. Notice how often the narrator repeats this, his son. And he placed him on the altar above with respect to the wood. Verse 10. And Abraham stretched out his hand, and he took the... Now, earlier I thought it looked like it could be fuel, but here it seems to be a knife. It's the same word. It comes from the root akal, which means to consume. So you could consume fire, wood with fire. You could, I suppose, consume a person with a knife. Here it seems to be a knife. And he took the knife in order to slaughter. Shakat is the technical term used in Leviticus for the slaughter of the sacrificial animals. And the tradition is that they would slit their throat. That's how they would do it. It was the quickest way and the most humane way to kill an animal, so that their concern was not to let these animals die slowly and unnecessarily suffer. Anyway, here he uses that technical term, the knife to slaughter his son. And he cried, and so there's some great artwork on this, you know, of Abraham just about to slit Isaac's throat. Very, just a some terrifying artwork on it, really. And the angel of Yahweh called to him from the heavens and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here am I. And he said, verse 12, don't stretch out your hand to the lad. Don't do to him this sacrifice, this offering. Now, here's the key. Why did God test Abraham? The text says very clearly, for ata, now, yadati, I know. God is speaking. Now I know. I didn't used to know this. Now I know this. Now I know that you, Yirei Elohim, are a God-fearer. Now I know that you fear God. And you got to supply since, or given that, or in that, you did not withhold your son, your most beloved, from me. So the test was so that God would learn something about Abraham's heart. Now, in order to do that, the test actually had to happen. See? So this is not just God's omniscience. This is God's experiential knowledge, the kind of knowledge that you gain from actually seeing something. So the test had to happen in history. And then God would see it, and then he would say, now I yada. Now I know in this intimate, experiential way that you fear God. So God basically was pushing Abraham to the wall to see if Abraham feared God. Now, that's worth a sermon right there. Let's reflect on that. What kind of God is that? This is a God who's interested in how people respond to his promise. He doesn't just kind of throw his promise out there and then go away and could care less what the people do with his promise. This is a God who's concerned. He gave Abraham a promise. He wants to see what Abraham's response is here. See? Is Abraham my servant? Is he faithful? And he wants to see it when by putting Abraham in the worst situation imaginable. See? Going to really push him to the wall. See what he's made of. So this is a God who cares
how people respond to his promise. See, he tests people in order to find out what's in their heart. You have the same thing very often in the Old Testament. Okay, then verse 13, and the rest of it is, as we can actually stop here, the rest of it is how Abraham then found a ram and sacrificed the ram in place of his son. And at the end, what is interesting about the pericope is that God repeats his promise. Look at verse 17. For indeed I will bless you, and indeed I will multiply your seed like the stars of the heavens and like the sand which is on the shore of the sea, and your seed will possess the gate of his enemies, and they will acquire blessing in your seed, all the nations of the earth. So all the nations of the earth will acquire blessing in your seed because you have hearkened to my voice. So God reaffirms his promise to Abraham that, yes, you are going to have many descendants. In your seed, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. The promise is still alive. It's still going on. So that's kind of God's response to Abraham's response to God's original promise. So first God promises, Genesis 12. Abraham responds by fearing God. Now God reiterates his promise. Okay, so I think the thing I'd focus on would be, does God test people and why? And what does this tell us about God? That God cares what we do with his word. He doesn't just throw his word out there and say, now you can do whatever you want with it, I'll go mind my own business. So he wants to see how we, you know, do we really love him with all our heart? He's interested in knowing that. He made a relationship with us. He wants to know, do we love him with all our heart or not? And a test is the way he finds out. Okay.